gentlemen. Welcome to Tech Talk by TechCruncher. This Tech Talk is brought to you by our sixth online edition, available now on our website in the shop. Today, it's my huge pleasure to welcome David Moser. Welcome, David, to the Tech Talk. It's been a long time coming, I'm pretty sure.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
For our listeners who may not be as familiar with your work and your journey on the YouTube and in Instagram, can you tell us a little bit about the blog, whatever you call it personally, and the journey, how it started for you? Because this is watching your videos makes for me personally, it is a very refined style in a sense, and it's a really personal style, and it's really something that lacks, I think, on a larger scale in, fashion-oriented blogs. And you can definitely see your, life experiences put on the vlog. It's an interesting story behind it, if you can tell us about it.
I mean, yeah, that's a loaded question. I could probably talk 2 hours just on that. For those who don't know me, my name is David Moser. I'm 35 years old. I live in Munich, Germany. And there's few people that might know me, could either know me from my YouTube channel, which is by my name, basically, David Moser, and my brand, which is called Skinosh, where we'll talk about later on. But yeah, so the YouTube channel I've had for a year now. So I think I've uploaded 60-ish videos so far. And I started the YouTube channel just because I needed another creative outlet. And I felt like I didn't just want to be the consumer, right? Not just to buy stuff, but also talk about it and explain why I buy things and test things out and stuff like that. So that was the original idea why I started the channel. And I also wanted to combine my different, hobbies in my life, right? So one big hobby for me is fashion, obviously, but then also sports is a big hobby for me. I run a lot. And so I wanted to combine those basically and do reviews of stuff that I actually wear when doing an activity, but also talk about how I incorporate sporty shoes, for example, Salomon's in a fashion related outfit, I guess. So yeah, that was the original idea of the channel. And I started out with more sport related content, I would say, testing things in the mountains and stuff.
I think this is how I found your person, the video on the comparison between Hoka's. Mm-hmm. I think this was my first introduction, and I was yo, this guy is doing sport videos. I'm gonna check out the other ones, and I was oh wait, it's not really that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think, kind of confusing for some people who are not or have not been watching many videos. So and that's why I always say I merge avant-garde with techwear, so that people understand where I'm going with this, I guess. But I try to merge those kind of styles, and it's my personal style basically, and it's my journey where I progress over time, not necessarily improve, but progress, hopefully improve. And I just wanted to document that, right? And I think lots of people out there, they change their styles a lot, and sometimes you tend to get lost, right? You have a style for a year, then you move to another style, I guess. And I found that over the years that I had several different style areas that I progressed to and then moved back to the first one and then again to the second one. And so I thought, okay, why not try to combine all of those styles into one master style, I guess. So that's my journey that I'm currently on. I'm still not at the goal. But it's fun to do the videos, and I think people enjoy it. So yeah, all happy.
There's definitely a community in the comment section, at least for I watch every single one, just saying, big fan. But generally speaking, the part of what you represent, in a sense, is, you know, well, your motto, I think, is merging the avant-garde with techwear. It's, I'd say it's somewhat the original, I guess, techwear was always an avant-garde movement, you know, going back to the 90s and like even before. And you mentioned a lot that you were into avant-garde slash artisanal pieces for a long time. And, you know, we've seen the videos and, you know, you're talking about CCP and all those, you know, really, again, artisanal brands. How did the techwear come into the mix? Was it solely because you were interested in sportswear and, you know, you're personally, I know you run, did this influence the addition of techwear into the David's view on avant-garde clothing?
I mean, that was definitely a big factor, yeah. Because like when you run like 90K a week, your feet hurt and it's hard to wear like handmade leather boots, or at least my feet hurt. So that definitely played a role, but also just the pure like functionality aspect played. There's like one, this pinnacle moment, which I talked about like a couple of times already, but it's, I had like a, it was winter here in Munich, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I had like this big coat on from an avant-garde designer, like a handmade coat out of wool. And it weighed like 4.5 kilograms. But then when the wind came, like I was freezing, right? So it wasn't really functional. And that was the moment like where I bought my first Stone Island jacket, because I thought, okay, this weighs like a couple of hundred grams, keeps me warm. Everything perfect. So there is definitely, like, from my point of view, at least, like, on the one side, the romance of the artisanal handmade products. But then also you need some functionality, or I need some functionality. Like, when it rains outside, I want to be protected from the rain. Or when it's cold outside, I want to be warm. So there's definitely the functionality aspect as well. And I just, another, probably, like, the third aspect is, like, I admire the, like, engineering of garments. And that's an area like where I don't have much experience in, but I absolutely like, yeah, want to deep dive into that in the future. So I would say those are the three areas why I don't solely focus on like avant-garde artisanal pieces, but also on like more technical. And I mean, techwear, like, it's such a big term, and it's, yeah.
So it's too big sometimes. Nobody can really tell what it is at this point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's why I don't like to use it, actually, but I still obviously use it. I mean, like, for me, like, when I think about like techwear, it's like hashtag techwear. You see, like, on Instagram, like, there's like this uniform, like, everybody looks, or most people look similar. Right. But then there's also like, and also like the other brands that you guys focus on, which are more like, I would say Gorpcore would be like a word for that. So it's really hard. Like, I don't like the labels, but I think I talk more about like technical pieces rather than like hashtag techwear stuff. That's what I mean. Yeah,
definitely. And this is another thing, if we can, you know, if it's appropriate to break down what brands you're into, there is you know, from the generally respected tech wear brands that, you know, also are merged into the streets, Stone Island plays a big role, since like you have a lot of pieces by them. Do they stand out for you because of the materials, or again, maybe there is a bigger picture? If not, you know, why does an item stand out for you personally? Because like I know, you know, they've been into materials for whatever the amount of time they've been there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were, I guess, one of the most influential brands ever, yeah, in terms of materials for any designer. Can you tell us about that?
I mean, yeah. So my interest in Stone Island is basically, I just appreciate, as you said, like, they've been doing this forever, and it's like 38 years or 36 years, I think 38 years. So, and they've always like been doing that, right? Whether it's a trend or not, like they have always like invented new fabrics, new dyeing techniques and new treatments and stuff. And I think like, yeah, being such a like a visionary company to do that in the early 80s, like has to be respected. And yeah, I just like a lot of the pieces, even though like some, I don't know, connections or personal connections that people have like to Stone Islands are more towards like the hooligan side, right? Which is, yeah, which is not my side, even though I'm from Munich, but yeah. So regardless of that, I always like appreciated their stuff. And I mean, I have a couple of pieces that like really stand out to me. One of them is the ice jacket, the resin T-shell down ice jacket, which basically changes color based on temperature. And that's just, I mean, that's an old jacket even. And that concept is even like older from Stone Island. I don't know when they launched the first one, but it was like many, many years ago. And it's such an like, still today, such an innovative and awesome concept in my opinion. Yeah, and I think it's most or many companies like to in today's market that we all know and love these days, right? They probably had some inspiration from Stone Island because they have been the originator. But to answer your second question, like what makes an item stand out for me, I think that's, I spend a lot of time thinking about that, and it's really difficult because there's no blueprint for me, right? Either everything goes together and is perfect or it's not. And I sometimes like even know that like when I'm making products myself, right? So sometimes I have a vision and then I do a prototype and it's like not at all what I wanted it to be. And then I do like 5 prototypes until I get into that ballpark. So it's really hard like for me to find a blueprint, but to me it has always been like, I guess the emotional connection to products. And that always sounds a bit cheesy like when I say that, but for me, like when I see something like a product and it makes me feel a certain way, I want to buy it because I want to feel that way that this piece embodies, if that makes any sense. And yeah, that is probably my answer to that question, that if I see an emotion in a product, I buy it. And if I don't, I don't buy it.
And that's another thing, you know, I really appreciate your, if I can call it a vlog, because I think it's more of a personal thing rather than, again, as I said, rather than just a review of products. Since you bring the emotional part into the mix and, you know, tell people and viewers about it. And I think it's something that's lacking, as I said again. However, I think really, if I can break down, you focus a lot on materials, since I think you're a geek for such things. And I think it brings us well to the Skinosh and your work, if I can call it that, art, if you call it yourself. I was interested in how it all, you know, for you, because I know Germany and is a big, you know, player in terms of handcraft of leather goods. And, you know, you can call a lot of brands from Germany and, you know, Bavaria, who are really, really into going deep on, you know, leather craft, leather goods. Tell us about Skinosh and your approach to it. There's definitely a big story again. I really like the, you know, your approach, I think, looking at the pieces itself, is that it's handmade by you rather than it's just handmade.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that also in your videos, you know, you talk about designers doing their, you know, artisans doing their product, and it's done by them rather than it's, you know, their product.
Yeah.
This is a big difference in that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe let's start at the beginning. I just mentioned before that, like, I love the emotional connection to a piece, right, when I buy something. And so one day I thought, okay, why not? Because when I buy something, I want to feel a certain way. Or when I wear it, let's put the buying aside, right? Let's say I want to feel emotion XYZ, then I wear those shoes, for example. And then one day I thought, okay, why not reverse engineer that and maybe have an emotion and then create a product out of that emotion? So that was my first idea, I guess. And then next I thought, okay, what's like my medium? Like, what should I use? So what kind of products should I do? And what, or even art? Like it was really like freestyling, and like what kind of method? And then I thought, okay, I really want to do something with my hands, right, that I do myself. And then, like, since I was like deep into like the avant-garde stuff, and leather plays a big part in avant-garde, I thought, okay, it kind of makes sense to just experiment with like sewing leather by hand. And yeah, that was like the basic start of it. And that was like 4 years ago where I started the brand. And then it just like grew. And I've been doing it ever since. I love it. And I still like sew everything with my hands, like when I'm sewing leather at least. So no sewing machine, no machine used at all actually in making the product. And yeah, so currently I'm doing like small bags and like wallets, card holders and stuff like that. Yeah, and then recently I moved, since like the parallel to the YouTube channel, I guess, like where I'm merging more like technical fabrics also with like artisanal avant-garde brands, I also experiment with like more technical fabrics as well. So I prefer Dyneema these days. And so I'm doing like several things, like just bags made out of Dyneema, but also, for example, like a leather bag that is lined. So the lining is made out of Dyneema. So just experimenting with like the combination, I guess, of those two worlds, which is super interesting.
And the journey started without the technical, I guess, fabrics and, you know, the buckles and fidlock and all that. Do they add like the feeling, or are they functional for you?
Oh, both. Absolutely both. Yeah.
Because, seeing the Dyneema coming into the artisanal world, you know, on a bigger scale is pretty interesting, because it's, you know, the quality, rather the properties of the Dyneema fabric is really similar. And it's really somewhat of a 21st century leather and a, you know, 10th century leather coming in together, doing a merge. So I think it's the best way to describe whatever you do. Are there any other materials that are you're trying, like, want to try out and focus on maybe later?
I experiment with like some of the standard material, or not standard, but like more regular materials, like Cordura, for example. But I mean, the X-Pack, is it pronounced X-Pack? Yeah. So X-Pack is definitely something that I want to get into as well, because I just love the structure of it. But I actually have ordered my first like X-Pack fabric, but it hasn't arrived yet. So
COVID and stuff, right?
Sorry?
Yeah, COVID and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, just like Dyneema alone, like there's so many different like versions and thicknesses. So I think like I could probably go on for the next years just like testing out Dyneema, which is awesome. Yeah. I mean, to me, like it's, maybe I'm exaggerating, but like it has like an like a romantic capacity, I guess. Like on the one hand, it's like super lightweight and thin, so it looks like fragile, but then it's super, super strong. And it, to me, like that Dyneema is the extreme of that concept, you know, like the thinnest and lightest, but then also like the strongest which is super cool.
And toughest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself at your level an artisan, or how do you think about the craft yourself?
Yes, I'd like to think so. I mean, it's always so difficult, like how do you like judge yourself, right? But I definitely learned like leather craft from proper leather craftsmen. And I would say like the craftsmanship is definitely there. You hopefully can tell in the products, right? So yeah, I would definitely consider myself to be an artisan in that case, yeah.
And does this also affect, because again, coming from the, you know, the videos you describe, like from whenever you talk about leather pieces, you know, by CCP and, you know, you talk boots and you talk jackets, and there's a certain passion towards the craftsmanship behind the product. Again, you can tell, you know, looking at the videos, that you know how hard it is to make stuff like that. Does it affect, you know, whenever you look at the product, you just, you know, scan it? Because for me, since I know, you know, I've been researching, like the team behind Tech Hunter have gathered such a big base of knowledge. Whenever I look at a product, I kind of stop sometimes and I just see, you know, pieces and it's thread going, and I'm like, yeah, okay, so this is like that. Okay, cool. I like this because it's made like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a cool thing for a person, you know, to come from, you know, whenever you advance beyond the consumer phase and you can actually start seeing those things. I think, you know, our projects somewhat try to educate the consumer in a sense.
Yeah.
Because you go from the avant-garde, we go from the technical and functional clothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like brands could do a better job explaining it themselves. I mean, I'm not sure like how many or if all consumers actually care. I think like some consumers, they're all like, it's a beautiful piece, I want it, I wear it. But I think there's like a large portion of people, and that's why you gathered such a big following, I guess, because like lots of people want to go like beyond just the product and want to know why it is constructed so beautifully, or what the materials are, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah.
And how did the avant-garde itself, since like way back, came into your view? Because like, not a lot of people just wake up someday and say, yeah, I want the CCP jacket with titanium pads right now. Like right now.
I mean, yeah, that's probably not the first piece you start off with. Yeah, you probably go like small steps and then you end up at that jacket, probably. That's like the end.
This is where you go way beyond the understanding of a mortal man. You're way there. 25th century living.
It's hard to say, like, it was not like a journey that I planned out, I guess. But I wanted some, I don't know, I just like the feeling, like, to know that a human being made my product that I'm wearing. And I mean, obviously it's all made, or most made, by humans to some extent, but I mean at a more like personal scale, I would say, rather than like huge production line. And that was something that drew me into avant-garde, I would say.
Yeah, the journey coming, you know, whenever you look at the technical piece, I think I'm gonna try to quote you, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You said about that, you know, whenever you look at the, I guess, like acronym jackets and, you know, the other pieces like that, you can see less of a, I guess, human put into that, more of a machine, and it's kind of soulless in a sense, in terms of a feeling. However, whenever you look at the artisanal pieces, you know, Greg Laurent pieces, you can see a a really crazy human being doing whatever he's doing best. And it's definitely an added value for a lot of people, I think, when whoever understand the clothing more than just labels put onto yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that's my view, and I understand like that people have different opinions on that, and that's cool. And it's not like I don't know, like it's just an emotion that comes up. You know, it's not planned. Like I like a lot of like technical pieces, but I just don't have that level of emotion there that I have as when it's like really when you can see that it's handmade. And Greg Lauren is a good example there.
Did any of the designers that you talk about, I guess artisans and whatnot, who was the most like from all the, like it's not really a big pool of people, but you know, from those giants, who did affect your Skinosh like brand approach to handcraft the most, if you can pinpoint somebody?
I would definitely say it's CCP, since you mentioned Carol Christian Pearl.
It's important. Everybody listening. I'm gonna point you to a video in the comment section. You guys go to the video and listen.
I didn't want to be too offensive in the video. It's not. It came across a bit too offensive. That's why a lot of people just say CCP and they're safe, you know. No, but that was definitely the biggest influence on me, and not necessarily like to get direct inspiration or like copy anything or whatever, but just the approach of experimenting so much and trying things out. And yeah, that definitely was like a big inspiration for me, like to, I don't know, like throw leather into like the washing machine at 90 degrees, see what comes out, and like stuff like that, just like to experiment with the material and see what you can make. Yeah, that was definitely a huge inspiration for me.
In other fields of culture, I know, you know, you have a tattoo, obviously, by Wu-Tang, you know, the quote by Wu-Tang. Is this just another of your life experiences? Because, like, I'm a fan of the one, but just, it's interesting to see someone you know, go an extra way to tell.
I mean, so you're asking about the tattoo?
No, I'm just asking, the tattoo is a, you know, byproduct. I'm interested in the, you know, the other fields of influence for you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, okay, so maybe just two sentences to the tattoo. So there's, it says protect your neck on the back of my head. And so the first Wu-Tang album was the first CD that I bought back in the days. And I mean, yeah, big Wu-Tang fan, but then also like I injured my neck. I had two dislocated discs in my neck. So I was like, yeah, in bed for a very, very long time, and I'm still like in pain. So I guess it sort of has like a double meaning, the tattoo. That's why it felt right. Yeah. But I mean, other influences in general, like, yeah, I like music a lot. It's really hard to say, to pinpoint one genre.
Yeah, it would be a dumb question to ask, you know, whatever your favorite musician is. Come on. Nah, it's not that. It's another thing, because like you see, you know, whenever you're doing videos, you can see a lot of art pieces on the walls, and I'm pretty sure there's a meaning behind all of that for you. And again, bringing your into, you know, most YouTubers do this in their studio with a setup and stuff, and you do it like in your own living space in a sense. So again, I guess there is, for a lot of artists and whoever do stuff with their hands, there's a big pool of inspiration for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you talk about art, like my favorite artist, and that probably matches also like the, since we talked about CCP, George Kondo is my favorite artist. And I don't know, like the first painting that I saw from George Kondo, I thought, okay, this is the CCP of the art world. I don't know, that was my first feeling. And yeah, I have like many George Condo pieces, not originals. Unfortunately, I'm not a millionaire, but like prints. And in my studio, I have like a couple of big ones, like 2 by 2 meters and stuff. And I mean, yeah, since we talk about art, like his art has big inspiration on the Skinosh pieces as well, right? So like 2 years ago, I did an exhibition in an art gallery in Rome where I basically showed like a couple of bags. And I had to come up with a concept. And so my concept was based on a series made by George Condo. So George Condo had like a series that was called Mental States, where he basically painted people, for example, like a banker. He was dressed in a suit like a banker. But then if you look at his face, you can tell like that he's a bad person, basically. So he was painting like their character, I guess. And that was kind of an inspiration for that exhibition that I did there. And so the concept that I came up with was called Path to Insanity. And it was basically, I chose like 2 models, one for men, one for women. And I did like 5, 6, 7 iterations of each bag. And so the first one was basically like a super posh, like a luxury item bag. And then like the bags degraded from model to model towards insanity, right? So it was sort of like the mental states in that collection. And the last piece then was like burnt down and there was just like only a couple of pieces left. And that, yeah, sort of like represented like a mental breakdown, I guess. And so I did one for men, one for women. And yeah, so that was, it's probably a good example of like how art has an influence on my work.
Do you, for listeners who are into, you know, trying their, because I know a lot of people nowadays trying, you know, especially when with all this time on their hands and, you know, sitting at home, a lot of people are trying to saw or do something with your own hands. Do you have any advice for those people? Since, you know, handcraft, like leather handcraft is one of those, I guess, cornerstones of understanding how the anything in the world is created, literally, because it was the original way of doing things. Can you, you know, give some advice for such people, maybe?
I mean, yes, of course, but there's not gonna be like that
one advice. There's not gonna be one advice.
I mean, the advice is practice, practice, practice. I don't know if you read Malcolm Gladwell, who said like it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill. And that has to be an approach, I guess, if you want to do it at a certain level. But yeah, I mean, in today's world, and that's like the beauty, I guess, of the time we live in, like information is almost free, right? Or basically free. And you can find online tutorials on literally everything online. So I would start there and just learn, 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 practice, practice, practice. And maybe not buy like the most expensive tools in the beginning. Just see if you like get along, and if it works out for you, then upgrade slowly over time. Because I know like those things can get like really expensive in the beginning. So yeah, that would probably be my, and then like I've been doing this for, so the, I founded the brand 4 years ago, but I started learning like 5 years ago, and I'm still like spending conscious time just to like learn and improve. So I think like it's super important to always, yeah, study basically. And there are books out there, but they're also like YouTube is a big, big source for many people, especially to get started to a certain level. And how I did it then is like I learned basically from like 2, I would call them like master craftsmen. One was in London, one was in Rome. So I spent time there like to learn directly from those people. But those steps like don't have to be like the first step, right? You can just probably easily spend like 2 years just learning by yourself and then progress from there.
The one more thing about that, I think what is a you know, a problem for a lot of people is pricing their, you know, handcrafted pieces. And I think avant-garde artisanal pieces are an important part of, you know, the industry, showing people that, you know, an actual piece that is done by a human being must cost in retail, you know, whatever the amount of time and the heart put into that. How do you do that? Like, I think for, it's a problem for a lot of people, you know, putting their things out there and asking for a sum of money from it.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely like another topic that I could probably talk like 2 hours about. So I just look at like my material and the time that I spent, and then I go from there. So that has to be the basis, right? You can't just think, okay, this should cost X, Y, Z. A problem for me basically was in the beginning, and now I'm only selling on skinosh.com, right? So direct to consumer, because the markup that the stores have, like, just don't make sense for me, because I would have to... So basically, I mean, I don't want to go into like margins, but yeah. So if I sell, let's say, a bag to a store for like 100, they will sell it for 300. And 300 would be too much for a bag that I would sell for 100. In my case, because it's handmade, right? When you have like a, not necessarily mass production, but like a bigger production, you can like lower the costs, obviously, and then it makes more sense. But for a truly like handcrafted piece, going by a store just didn't make any sense. And that's why I'm selling direct to consumer. But yeah, in terms of pricing, I would say like to beginners, like check what your materials cost, and then give yourself like an hourly wage, and then you have a price, and then add, I don't know, like marketing costs or whatever. So just like a classic business.
And some people should not, you know, should remember that this is, selling things is not ruining the art of doing things. I think this is sometimes lost on people, you know. Generally speaking, we're gonna jump a bit away from the Skinosh, and I, since the first video I saw from you was the Hoka comparisons for running, there's definitely a big passion in terms of not just running, but the older videos showcase you going trailing and so on. Does the outdoor play a big part for you in, you know, in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, I have been injured for the last, I don't know, 4 months maybe. That's why I didn't do a new video in the mountains. But yeah, I started running like slowly again last week, so I'll hopefully get back on track. But yeah, definitely plays a huge role. And I feel blessed like to live in Munich with the great outdoors, right? It's like a 30-minute drive to the nearest mountains, and then like a 40-50-minute drive to Zugspitze, which is like the highest mountain in Germany. So yeah, it definitely plays a big role. I love running, but I also go like hiking with my wife. Yeah, and either running here in Munich, where we have like the big lake, which is called Isar, which basically goes through whole Munich, so you can run by the water forever, basically. Or you can just like, yeah, what I do like once a week probably is like take the car 30 minutes and then like run in the mountains. Yeah, so I'm super excited to get healthy again and then increase my mileage.
Get that Strava score out, you know. And how do you view the, you know, since the pandemic started, the general hype? I mean, we've been seeing it for a while now, and the hype around the outdoors and everything that is connected to, I guess, the necessities of going there have become more of a, you know, out there thing. It's now everywhere. Everybody's doing, you know, outdoor collections. Everybody's getting into the camping, glamping, you know, hiking, so on and so forth. I asked Leander from Racing Atelier about the question, and I think this is a really personal thing to some people, especially in Germany. The great outdoors, can it be damaged by this hype, or how do you view, you know, people getting into this now on such a mass scale?
Yeah, I think it's a blessing and a curse, right? There are two sides of the story. So maybe let's start with the negative and then focus on the positive. So I think, yeah, definitely the outdoors or the nature can be damaged by too many people. So no doubt. The other negative side is I really feel for those people who live there in those like small villages that basically can't go, like at least on the weekends, right? They can't just leave their house and go for a walk because there's so many people out there and it feels like a city center sometimes. Like it really has, like traffic has increased tremendously. Not, I mean like foot traffic on the mountains. But the positive side is I think people now realize like they don't have to go and take a plane to a beautiful place. They have a beautiful place where they live. And I think the more the better, to be honest. Like even when it's sometimes a bit too crowded for myself on the mountains, I still think it's better that people appreciate nature. And it probably takes some time because they have, I think this year we've seen a lot of people who like went to the mountains for the first time probably. And maybe they will appreciate it a bit more like over the next few years and then learn to respect the natural environment more. So I think we can all like profit from that. And in terms of like fashion, like more brands going or focusing on to the outdoors, I think it's always a good thing. Like more competition is always good because it pushes other brands to do better stuff. And from a personal view, like from a consumer perspective, I don't mind if everybody has like or is following the same trend, to be honest. Like I've never been a person who follows trends, but I also don't care if other people have like the same products that I have. To me, it's like I buy the best product for me, and if everybody else has it, okay. If nobody has it, it's also okay.
And you know, I'd say the results of whenever this whole thing ends will show, I think, to, as you said, to more people, you know, that there's no need to buy a plane ticket for 2 days in Paris and then go back and ruin somebody, you know, local's life with the crowds around, you know, the main attraction city. And there's much more to explore. I think the term is called slow tourism or something like that, because, you know, whenever people travel and stay for a while and travel around the country and so on and so forth, and there's so much more to, let's say, Germany than just Munich and Berlin. there's a whole country. Just it's something to for more people should probably, you know, look into some whenever they can, since I'd say for us living in Russia, you know, there's a 12 million square kilometers of us, and we just live in the city and, you know, go to St. Petersburg some days and that's it. Now there's like this way back there to Alaska, from here to there. There's a whole country,
and in my opinion those parts are probably the most beautiful,
untouched in a sense. Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, the it's another thing to travel there, you know, price and stuff, but hopefully someday. Did at any point the fashion side of the outdoor, you know, outdoors in a sense, played a big role for you? Since, you know, you run trail in a Stone Island balaclava piece and, you know, so on and so forth. You bring the, I guess, the outdoors equipment to the city streets, you know, in terms of hawkers. Does it is there a merge as well? You know, the same with techwear and avant-garde. Is there a merge with the outdoors and the fashion nowadays, in your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my latest videos was the review of the Salomon Advanced XT4, right? Which is sort of like a fashion shoe these days, but it was originally a ultra running shoe, right? Back in 2013, I think they launched as an ultra running shoe. And yeah, shout out to Salomon for like being one of the first brands like to support ultra running as a sport. And yeah, I mean, they made their way into, and Salomon in general, right, made their way into the higher fashion end these days. So there's definitely a merging of the two worlds, not only for me, also for me, but like in general, as I think. And it's a good thing, in my opinion, because now I can wear those shoes without looking like a weirdo, like in a regular outfit. So, yeah.
And what's the best outfit to run an ultra in? If you can bring something to the ultra whenever you can.
I mean, I've never run an ultra, to be honest.
Is it on your radar?
Yeah, absolutely. This year I wanted to run the Marathon de Mont Blanc.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's not an ultra technically. It's 42K, 42.2K, so like a regular marathon, but has like 2K of vertical gain.
Yeah,
so
elevation there is crazy nice.
But it's definitely like, that is why I love running, is trail running, right? Being out in nature. It's such a big difference like to run in the city, even though Munich has a lot of like green spots, but trail running is definitely where my heart is at. And a trail ultra is definitely on my radar. But I mean, in terms of outfit, I think it's when you start at the bottom, like shoes, just get the shoes that are comfortable for you. I mean, everybody has different feet. For me, I need Hoka, so I run in the Speedgoat 4, which to me is, I prefer Hokas because they're super soft and I'm like on the taller and heavier side as a runner. So, but I know lots of people run in Salomons as well. I think hydration, like a hydration vest probably would be the most important piece when running an ultra, like lots of storage options and like stuff, pockets for like gels and fluids and stuff. I, for example, use a Salomon hydration vest, but I also have like a belt that is from Naked. I don't know if you know the brand. It's a very small brand from the US called Naked. And it's like a stretch mesh belt, basically, that is around your hip. And you can store like everything basically in there. So that would, if I had to choose one item, I would probably pick this one for any race or even training run.
And is there a piece, I remember the video about wearing one piece till the end of your life concept. Is there one piece right now that you think you could do that, like the one piece to rule them all? Or is it too hard of a question in terms of, I think it's somewhat the same, what's your favorite artist, but still.
No, I think it's a good question. So that obviously is super individual, right? And for me, like the piece that I enjoy the most and that probably embodies like my taste in fashion perfectly, and also hopefully my YouTube channel as well, is the Salomon Bamba 2, right? That's like the collaboration between Salomon Advanced and avant-garde artist Boris Bijan Zaberi. And it, in my opinion at least, like perfectly merges the two worlds of like handcrafting, artisanal fashion and technical fashion. So for those who don't know, it's basically a technical Salomon shoe, right, with a waterproof zip, etc. And those shoes are produced like in a fully white color, and then they're sent to Barcelona, where the Boris Bijan Zaberi atelier is, and then they are hand dyed, and then they're sent out to the stores. So that shoe for me like merges those two worlds like perfectly, and I would probably pick this one item. Yeah.
And do you lean towards more of a modern pieces in your search for, you know, grailed lists and so on, those videos? Do you lean towards what is made now or archive, or is there somewhat of an in-between point in this? Since, you know, a lot of, you know, OGs of the avant-garde, their pieces were, you know, they're 20 years old at this point. Some of them are even older. For me, like, one of the most, I guess, the best item to merge those worlds is, you know, from 90s, the ninja hood from Vexed Generation, I think, embodies the avant-garde and techwear in a sense the most. And this item is like, what, nearly 30 years old at this point. And we see an emergence in archive fashion coming back, an outdoor archive fashion, you know, the Arc'teryx pieces, you know, the Theta jacket with five pockets, that's like, what, 20 years old. Where do you find yourself in the search? Like, is this something you look into or you don't care?
So first of all, like, towards archive fashion, I think it's a really good trend. I really like the trend because I always feel like as a designer, like, you design so many pieces and you have so many seasons. So over like 10 years, I don't know how many hundreds of designs a designer makes. And through the trend of archive fashion, like, people appreciate past designs, which usually like tend to get forgotten, or some of them at least. So I think it's a good trend. Me personally, it really depends on the design. I'm not saying I only like the newest stuff, and I'm not saying I focus on archive stuff, but if it's a beautiful piece that's 20 years old, perfect. If it's brand new, also perfect. So it's really hard to say. Yeah.
But that's the, you know, the approach in terms of you speak about buying, wearing, selling, if you know, and changing your closet and rotating and not, you know, over consuming. I think the archive, you know, digging through the archives is, first of all, an emotional process, because, like, whenever you go to Germany, there's millions of amazing places to buy thrift, you know, clothing, if you're not into, like, too of a fashion-oriented world. Even there's a lot of fashion places that, you know, sell nowadays. There's an emergence in stores that sell archive pieces, and it's really cool that the internet provides such a platform. And also it does the, you know, I guess, play on the trend of a responsible approach to the clothing industry as a whole. And you personally teach that in your videos, at least this is how I view them.
Yeah, thank you. I try to.
Is this, you know, is it in the back of your head all the time?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it is.
I mean, I don't even want to use the word sustainability because it's so...
It's thrown around yeah, a lot.
So I'm not going to use it. But I think, like, everybody can do his or her part. And I think, like, obviously we have to, like, trust companies to do the right thing. But I think even we as consumers, like, can do the right thing. And to me, my approach is to say, okay, I rather spend more on an item and it will last so much longer, so I have less trash, basically. Right? I'd rather have, like, a sweatshirt for 10 years rather than a fast fashion thing for like 6 months and then throw it away and then buy the next one. And I also think, like, from a personal, like, finance perspective, it makes more sense, right? When you think about, like, cost per wear, for example, right? When you have an item for like 10 years, the cost per wear is going to be cheaper than actually buying like a fast fashion thing, which initially is cheaper. So that's one side. Another side is obviously, if you watch my videos, like, about buying and selling stuff. And I mean, I never throw stuff away, and I really take good care of my items as well. And if, yeah, I'm not interested in them anymore, I sell them. And I buy most of my clothes used as well. Yeah, and I think that's a big, like, if most of us are going to do it that way, that has a big influence on the environment, I think.
And it educates people to, you know, understand the history behind the clothing itself, not only like as a fashion situation, but the craftsmanship and, you know, the value of the actual piece. Does that, like, you speak about the emotional connection, and does that, I think it's one of the greatest added values to a, like, to a product. Do you think that, I mean, you probably do, but still, does it, is it the, one of the more important factors for young designers to, you know, have an added value in this sense? Or if we speak about technical pieces, they primarily focus on, you know, selling you a piece, but it's also like, you know, transformed into something, and it's not just one, but it's a like three in one, but, or, you know, it has all those cool added details. Is this one of those things that people should focus on in, you know, making of clothing itself?
I think ideally, yes, but it's also super, super difficult, right? And I know that, like, from a consumer perspective, what emotions I have, but I also make products and I try to put those emotions into a product. And I know firsthand how difficult that is. And probably if I show my bag to 100 people, I'd probably have 100 different reactions. And you can't, like, program an emotion into a product. And I mean, that's probably what's called marketing these days, right? But the interesting thing, right, when we talk about, like, my emotional connections to the pieces, like, those brands that I buy from, they don't do any marketing, right? So it's, the emotion basically came in my head, I guess. But it doesn't mean that everybody has the emotion, the same emotion looking at the pieces. So it's really difficult to put an emotion into a product. But ideally, yes, absolutely.
It's not universal, though, yeah.
But I also think, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a super personal emotion. I think it can also be an emotion towards, like, the history or the story of the brand, right? When you have more knowledge of, like, how a garment is produced, that also creates an emotion. And I think when we look at like, the Gorpcore brands, I would say, let's take And Wonder, for example. Like, when I look at those, let's say, Japanese outdoor brands, the emotion that I have is, okay, it's craftsmanship, it's appreciation for the outdoors, and I somehow have the feeling that, like, everybody's super friendly. I don't know why, that's, like, in my head, probably, but it feels like the community there is super, are just nice people.
Welcoming, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's welcoming in a sense.
And that's, for example, when I go to the Ruh store, right, which, you know, here in Munich, that's exactly how I feel. I go there and everybody's super friendly and I have those brands and I'm like, I'm just happy. And that's an emotion that I have from the brand, but it's also probably communicated through, like, the image of the company, I guess.
And, you know, also speaking about there, a lot of recent projects, they are focusing on this part, because it was lacking in a sense. You just went to a store and bought things and that's it, or you went to a mall and there's just a bunch of different stores, you buy something and you go, that's it, you get your, you know, whatever dopamines and stuff for buying, and that's it. Nowadays it's more of a community thing, and it's amazing, and it's something that, you know, should be expanded upon, especially in these times.
And it's an experience. Like, when I go to the Ruh store, it feels like I'm going camping. You know, there's, like, wood.
yeah.
Like a camping chair, and everybody's friendly and it smells nice. And yeah, it's an experience. And I think, especially when you look at, like, higher priced items, like, you, the experience has to be part of the purchase. right? Not just the product itself.
Shout out the Rooster. the one and only. Do you have any recommendations to like help for, you know, the brands, music, movies, food, places in Munich where we want to, you know, whenever we can come, you know, whatever we should look for? Your personal recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, the Rooster I already mentioned, right? Yeah. In terms of food, I would probably go to Sam, which is called is Sushi and Meat. So they have the best ramen in town and the best sushi as well. So yeah, I luckily live pretty close to them. So I get my ramen like three times a week or two, three times a week. So yeah, that would probably be my, and go to the outskirts. Like if you come to Munich, take the train, it's like 20 minutes. They're beautiful, like mountains and lakes, and yeah, Munich is a beautiful city, but the outskirts are more beautiful, in my opinion.
Anything we should be on the lookout for from Skinosh or yourself?
I mean, my videos are coming every Sunday, so yeah, don't be on the lookout for a specific video, but subscribe to the channel, absolutely, if you want to. And I mean, Skinosh, yeah, I'm working on many new products. So I just launched a vest bag, which is sort of like a vest with bags, I guess, made out of denim. And the next piece is going to be like a sling bag, which is, yeah, gonna be made out of different materials, definitely some out of technical fabrics and some out of leather as well.
All the links below for everybody who's interested. This Tech Talk is brought to you by our lovely Patreon supporters. If you would like to support the, not the channel, but the project, you can do this via the link below, as well as check out our 6 online magazine. It's available online in our shop at techhuntermagazine.com. We did it's a new project in the sense that this is completely digital, and it's about the outdoors and fashion industry colliding, merging, as well as our new project that's coming out. I think we're gonna announce it right now. It's called Techzors. It's the first, I think, complete database about the technical pieces, everything about the fabrics, the technologies, the materials, the brands, the production, and so on. Stay tuned. Thank you, David, for joining us today.
Thank you, guys, for having me.
It's my pleasure. Hopefully everything is going to be lifted soon, and we can someday come to you, to your place, and showcase the people's wonderful craftsmanship behind the Skinosh. Everybody, please go subscribe. We need to bring David to a million subscribers right now. He's one of the best on YouTube talking about fashion and merging with functional clothing, and I think one of my most favorite YouTubers on this theme because of your approach. You're amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor.
And thank you guys for listening. Have a great day. Wash your hands. Stay safe. Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.